Welcome to Visions, the weekly radio program dedicated to informing and educating persons in the general public about persons with disabilities. And today we are talking employment. Once again, we have HRMAB, Human Resources Association of Barbados. And representing them, we have Nicholas Roberts and Laura Herod. Thank you both for coming on the program.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Now, let's jump in here with that burning question that is on the lips of everybody. COVID-19. How have you found COVID-19 and its impact on HR in Barbados today? And both y'all can answer.
Once again, good morning, listeners, and thanks for having us. In terms of how COVID has impacted HR, I think it has made HR, or forced HR to, in Barbados specifically, to come into the 21st century. So as a perfect example, a lot of organizations did not have work-from-home policies, or if they did, they did not really utilize them. So because of the way the virus impacted many businesses within Barbados, both in the public and the private sector, it forced many businesses to have their workers utilizing that sort of work-from-home flexibility policy. In terms of the way it has impacted people, it has disrupted the livelihoods of people, unfortunately, in terms of the way that they make an income or a livelihood. And it has also impacted people mentally. So to shorten my answer, COVID has really impacted people in many different ways, from both a socioeconomic or political, many different ways it's impacted the workforce within Barbados.
Like the name says, HRMAB, Human Resources Association of Barbados, suggests that there is a collective body of HR persons forming an association to do what exactly?
Right. So from my perspective as a member of HRMAB, I think that we are a body which seeks to improve the practice of human resources management within the country and also serve as a resource for practitioners. In other countries, you will have like the Society for Human Resource Management. The UK has their body. And it is a way for members to come together to speak about best practices, to share best practices throughout the country as well. We're involved in training and development. We are involved in industrial relations, labor relations. We advocate for members and advocate for matters that we believe are of importance to the practitioners within the organization, but also to the nation as well.
Now, we would have heard or hearing, because it is still ongoing, the rising unemployment in Barbados because of the pandemic that's going on and so many people on the breadline are unemployed. And it suggests that the information that we are hearing is unprecedented in that we have not had such a situation like this of unemployment. So I am wondering, as a HR association, what would be your feelings about the spike in unemployment, and what would be the best practice going forward?
Well, so what I would say in these different forms when I'm asked about unemployment in Barbados, before we get to COVID, I always want to say that we always look at unemployment, but we don't look at underemployment within Barbados. So even before COVID impacted us, there were many people across the island that had problems finding work. And then when they did find work, it was in areas one that they were overqualified for. So then add COVID on top of that, compounding the issue where there was unemployment and underemployment within the island, then you have a case where rise in unemployment rate has increased. Coming out of COVID, that will probably make things even worse, because people then will probably have to once again take jobs that they when or if jobs become available that they're too qualified for. How we need to handle that, I think the Prime Minister has already said that we need to retool, retrain, redesign the way we do things. both from a national perspective and within our organization. So I think that is the way forward. People need to also look at ways to diversify their skill sets to see and maybe been doing something this way or doing a certain job for X amount of years, but see how it is that maybe they could pivot and, you know, see how they can redesign and retool themselves going forward.
You use a term there, underemployment and unemployment. And for the listeners, along with myself, could you explain the difference between the two?
Sure, no problem. So obviously, unemployment is the rate of people within a nation or within a sector that cannot find work or do not have work. Underemployment means that people are taking jobs that they are overqualified for. So say, for instance, people that have bachelor's or master's degrees are taking entry-level positions that require little to no qualifications, whether it be CXCs or a baseline requirement. So basically, you are doing it. So let's say someone has an associate degree or a bachelor's or and a master's in HR, but they are doing an entry-level clerical position, which their skill set is way above what is needed for that position. So that is the difference between unemployment and underemployment.
And hearing the explanation, the first thing that comes to mind is, well, there has to be some kind of implications for underemployment. Well, no, let me say Barbados, but generally, what are really the implications for a situation such as underemployment in the workforce?
Well, it generally means that people are going to become disengaged because they are, one, if you studied a field and you're not able to get work in that field, or if you're too qualified for a position, it may mean that the work may not be as mentally stimulating for you. So people tend to become disengaged. And the workforce generally is not as productive as it needs to be. From a very baseline perspective, that is what happens in terms of underemployment. I don't know if Laura has any perspective on it.
So I think you gave a very comprehensive definition, and you spoke about the disengagement. I think one of the things that is also important to understand is that when we have a closed market, so to speak, in Barbados, and we have persons who have qualifications such as a bachelor's, master's, et cetera, but they're working in entry-level positions, there's a lot of pressure that is created in the system. I can call it a pipeline for persons who would otherwise be filling those types of positions as well. I think we need to move beyond thinking about work in the borders of Barbados and looking at how we can expand throughout the Caribbean and the other countries. It's 2020, and there are ways for us to think about where can I work outside of Barbados and utilize my skills.
Now, let me pick you up on that point, Laura, and ask this question. Now, there are persons with disabilities out there who have their concerns about employment. I dare say that many disabled persons are not employed and are seeking employment. And one of the things that we're constantly told, but not only by HR persons, but get qualified, you know, go there and get as much education as you can. Therefore, then when a job comes along, you know, you can apply for it. Now, we know that in reality, you will go and do your qualifications and get your bachelor's, as you said, and then you go for a job. But there's no job existing at this point in time where you can access that will see your skills being utilized. And this could very well be the case for persons with disabilities. So, obviously, we're in a position where we have to, you know, you grab any job you can get, regardless of what it is. How would you then approach, and I'm hoping it's not a very difficult question, how would you then approach underemployment for a person with a disability who is now gaining a job, having a qualification where they can have an advanced level position or whatever position other than what they are getting at this point in time? How would you approach something like that?
Okay, so I think there's a lot to unpack in the question that you asked.
It's a loaded question.
Right. But I will start off by saying this. I think that there is education, and then there is targeted education. I think there's a responsibility for all persons who are looking to study and develop themselves to take a look at the job market and to see what areas jobs are available in, and that should help to guide the areas that they should study. I know that you may love a particular subject or you might like a particular business, but that doesn't mean that's where employment can be found. And I think you need to make a conscious decision, first of all, of whether you will follow heart or whether you will follow the path that will lead to employment in an area. Sometimes you're able to marry the two, sometimes you can't do it immediately. So I think there's still some responsibility to do research. And I think, though, the issue of underemployment, and I know we're looking at persons with disabilities, but it is a problem across the country. It is perhaps more difficult for persons with disabilities because they face the additional challenge of employers being hesitant to employ. But I think education is necessary. I think upskilling is necessary. And I would say to anyone, if there's an area that you want to pursue, you should do that. I will also say that you may not start off in the job that you wanted, but I think getting the foot in the door is important because that can be a stepping stone to other things.
Well, obviously there are persons who will be listening that will be saying, well, maybe I can ramp up my intensity of looking for a job, even though the climate looks a bit gloomy, lack of a better word. But what are HR persons expecting to see when a person with a disability comes before them for a job? Arm me now with some information that I can come, that I can, bowl you over, with my presentation on getting that job.
Okay, so I think both Nicholas and I will weigh in on what we're looking for. It may be a little different depending on industry, but for us, we look at the ability to perform the role. And that is not specific necessarily to physical ability, but we're looking at attitude. We're looking at the aptitude. We're looking at willingness to learn, to be trained. And sometimes it may ask for a qualification. That depends on your role. But I think that we hire more in our industry for the attitude and willingness to be trained, rather than necessarily qualifications.
No, so something came to mind when you were saying that. And I'll use a personal example. A while back, there was a job offer where I was asked to apply. And the job was way out of my, I don't want to say capabilities, because obviously I was applying for the job, so I felt that I was capable of doing the job. But based on the qualifications that the job was demanding, I weren't meeting those qualifications. But based on my experience, I know that I could do the job. Now, does this happen a lot as HR persons? Do you see people coming to interviews who are, obviously you always hear, suitable applications or unsuitable applications will not be acknowledged. So we know that if you ain't coming with the 5 CXCs and the job want 10, you ain't getting. But there are some situations where a person, I don't want to fall through the cracks, but comes before you, gung-ho and enthusiastic about having this job, but when you look at their qualifications, they're not up to scratch. How do you address that, and what advice do you have for us out here who may see a job believing that we can do it and really wants to try and convince them that we can do this job?
So I will jump in here. What I will say, because I always have this discussion with my friends, I would say apply. Getting your foot in the door, as Laura had mentioned earlier, is one of the biggest hurdles. And there's also a thing that you can teach people skills, but you can't teach them in terms of when it comes to their attitude. So sometimes this attendant comes in front of you. To your point, they may not necessarily have all of the qualifications that you may be looking for, but if they have the base competencies or the base skills, if I would hope that there are businesses in Barbados out there that are, if you're willing to work with the candidate, sometimes you can turn a diamond in the rough. And sometimes I think, to your point, we overlook people because we have 10 criteria and person do not check off all of the criteria. Sometimes people fall between the cracks because of that. So what I will say is that, like Laura said, get your foot in the door, and then from there you have to sell yourself. Because basically that is what an interview is. You are selling yourself to me as the recruiting manager, and then also I'm selling myself to you as this is the organization that you want to come and work for. So I definitely think that, you know, people need to sell themselves and show what it is that I can do for the organization, what it is that I can, what is my competitive advantage or my competitive edge, what can I do that someone else can't.
Well, I'm thinking, well, it's going to give me some kind of trade secrets to get my foot in the door, especially when I have the qualifications. So I hope that you can give me some kind of heads up and how we can do that. Because something getting your foot in the door is it's pretty hard when what you have to put forward is on paper before I come before you to bowl you over with my
Mercy.
Dynamic. My dynamic personality. Mm-hmm. So outside of writing something that is not necessarily true, how does a potential person write their application or maneuver themselves in a way that they get a foot in the door so that when they get before you, I can say, well, yeah, boy, I ain't got the qualifications, but I really want to do this thing.
So you used a very interesting term when you said bowl you over with my personality. What I will say is that sometimes on paper, you need to be able to express a little bit of that in your application letter and the CV as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many services which can assist with creating an application and CV which will catch the hiring manager or the person who's going through those applications. It will catch their interest. So understand that paper also speaks, not just your verbals.
Does her mom help or have any program in place to help person with application writing, or that would be a little bit beyond your scope?
No, we've been throughout the years, because I've been with the association for about 5 years, so we've held many different workshops, through partnerships with different organizations where we go into the community and also into secondary schools, and we do provide that service. So yes, it is something that we do.
I understand. Now, when it comes to persons with disabilities specifically and applying for jobs, and one of the things that comes to mind is, let me break it down a bit. We hear of a job opening and we apply for the job based on our qualifications. But one of the things that is always present in our minds is, how will I be integrated into this workplace if I am successful in being hired? And when I say that, I mean for persons who may be deaf, and will there be sign language interpreters? Will I have a challenge communicating, although I'm qualified for this job? I'm blind. How will the place be accessible? Wheelchair access. These are practical things that comes to a person with a disability mind when it comes to being hired. How does your organization, how do you, both of you at HR persons, address this issue?
Okay, so for our organization, I mentioned before, when we were just chatting, that we do have a number of persons who are hearing impaired who work with us, and also one wheelchair user. So yes, there are practical things that need to be done. I think every workplace needs to, first of all, have the mindset that workers with disabilities can be integrated into the workplace. And I think they need to take action to understand what role persons with disabilities can fill and to make sure that that workplaces are accessible. I know sometimes persons are afraid of that because they think they'll have to retrofit the buildings and go through great expense to make things happen. But it isn't always costly, I need to say that, from our perspective. And also, there are usually roles within an organization that persons with disabilities can fill. And you need to make a conscious effort to consider what those roles may be.
I just want to say I definitely agree with everything she's saying, but also from a wider perspective, I think it also requires a cultural reset in terms of the way we look at people with disabilities. So from a national perspective, much like what Laura said, yes, in the workplace, we need to realize that people with disabilities can perform the job just as, or sometimes even better than able-bodied persons. But I think on a national perspective, we need to, you know, change our mindset towards differently able persons.
Do you think there's a fear in employers and companies hiring disabled persons as it stands now?
Yes, there is still some measure of fear, whether that's due to uncertainty, whether it's, again, fear about the cost that may be required to make accommodations. But I think Nicholas also hit the nail on the head when he spoke about the societal issue we may have in terms of integrating persons with disabilities into the workplace and also into life in general. When you look at other countries with their codes, their legislation, etc., and just everyday life, you tend to see persons with disabilities fully integrated into the society. And I think we need to, yes, grapple with that first so that we can have an easier transition into the workplace. But I think that workplaces who have persons with disabilities working also need to share their experiences, and I'm glad for forums like this, but they need to share their experiences and the success stories so that more people become comfortable with employing persons with disabilities. A whole lot of education is needed to combat that fear.
But then, when I brings me to the question, obviously, companies have their own dynamics and how they're structured. For example, a supermarket may be different to, say, a hardware store. And, you know, you have persons applying for positions or applying for a job, but you get a situation where the person is qualified for the job, but the environment is very unsuitable. But obviously, if you have a hardware store and a person in a wheelchair has to navigate too many things on the floor, then you get a situation where, well, here, I have a person who is qualified, but I do have an uphill struggle in terms of accessibility. And you are the HR person in the middle of this situation between the potential employee and your superior saying, well, look, Laura, we can't hire this man because he can't get through the wood on the floor because of his wheelchair and so on. How do you navigate that? And I'm asking that thinking in my mind that the HR person is the advocate to the employer on the behalf of the employee, who obviously comes with qualifications that you believe is an asset. And that's a loaded question again. Sorry.
Yeah. No problem. So you touched on a few things. So one, I would hope that the employer would not be saying, I don't want to hire this person because of this disability, because from the get-go, that is discrimination there, and that is a whole another topic on its own, so that we can could touch on later or in a different segment. But what I will say is that you are correct, that the HR person should be advocating for this potential employee. And I think we should be highlighting the benefits of hiring that person. Laura so rightly highlighted also that, you know, sometimes organizations are a bit leery about hiring differently abled persons because they're concerned about the cost that may come with it. But sometimes the only way that you can get around this is showing these persons the cost-benefit, doing a cost-benefit analysis. So basically showing what is the utility to the organization for hiring this person. So even though it may cost X dollars to retrofit your organization to accommodate this person, what are the other ways that the person can bring utility and add value to the organization? So I think that is what we as HR people should be doing on behalf of not only differently abled people, but people that are different, that come from different spectrums or backgrounds on a whole.
One of the things that, and following on from your point, one of the things that I've found is that when it comes to retrofitting or upgrading facilities as it relates to making a place accessible for a person with disabilities, those very features that are being upgraded are used by everybody. For example, you may put a ramp at the front of a building because you need a person with a wheelchair to get in because there were steps there before. And everybody now uses the ramp instead of the steps. And I find that seems to be a common trend in that the accessible features that you may put in for a disabled person makes life better for everybody who will use them. Bigger screen displays. We all know about the tiny fonts on computer screens. You may have a person with low vision, and you retrofit your computer network, and everybody gets to enjoy, bigger fonts. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that this is one of the ways you can lobby your superiors and think about, look at this as a benefit for all the employees. And it will help to, a comfortable employee is a productive one.
Correct.
I always hear that. So maybe we can look at, those kind of little tricks of the trade to really lobby in employers to really focus a bit more on accessibility as it relates to the entire workforce, and not necessarily as for one individual persons. Now, we are in a COVID environment, and things are much different for everybody. For you as HR persons, for me, a person unemployed looking for a job, and for those who have companies wanting to make their bottom line, what do you suggest to us out here with disabilities and non-disabilities, a non-disabled person? What should we equip ourselves today before you seeking employment?
So what I will say, retooling yourself, definitely. This is, COVID has brought about some very unfortunate times, some very unfortunate circumstances. But the thing about it is that it has given people a lot of free time, for better or worse. So people can be using this time to look and see what is needed within the job market, both, like Lawrence already touched on, not only on a national perspective, but both regionally and internationally, and see what is required and see where you can upskill yourself. So I think it's been a great initiative that the government has been offering a lot of different training in different areas for many different persons. So to look and see what field it is that you want to get into, see what training or what skills or what qualifications you need to get. And if you have the free time, use it as best as possible to equip yourself with that information, with that knowledge, and with that something that tangible output that you can provide to an organization. You can show them, I have X, Y, Z, and this is how I can do the job.
Yes, so I completely agree with Nicholas. What I will add to what he said, because I think he covered it well, is that we talk a lot about coming to someone to ask about employment, but I think, again, we're in 2020, and because we have technology, we are able sometimes, one, to explore entrepreneurship as well, and again, that's a whole other topic, but also to consider what types of employment are available to me to perhaps work from home. There's writing, you can be a creative or a content writer, journalism to a certain extent. There are areas that we need to explore in this COVID environment apart from going to an organization to say I'm looking for work. There, as we upskill, we can also look at ways to find self-employment as well and to get to entrepreneurship. So we can't slow people on that.
No, I was just saying, we live in a global economy, so to Laura's point, it doesn't even have to be entrepreneurship in Barbados. It can be an online job. You can be living in Barbados and doing work for a company that is in North America or Europe or whatever the case may be. So it doesn't have to be just to be confined to the borders of or the confines of Barbados.
HRMAB, Human Resources Management Association of Barbados, Nicholas Roberts and Laura Harewood. Thank you very much for coming on the program. We're out of time, and I would invite the two of you back again where we can further explore employment as it relates to persons with disabilities in a post-COVID-19 environment. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Barbara.